My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier, connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money, but are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
What's up? I'm Laura Carenti.
And I'm Alexa Kristen. The next few episodes, we're going to be bringing in founders and CEOs of independent agencies. Why? Because it's so important, especially since this last year, that founders and CEOs of independent agencies are found by the Adlandia community. These people have, in some cases, bootstrapped their businesses for years, have gone through amazing kind of links to do things like become a B Corp, to create completely new experiences for emerging technologies that we all are experiencing, and to represent a whole new wave of celebrity. So the next few episodes, we're really going to be celebrating independent agency founders. And our first person up, Jolie Hunt, CEO and founder of Hunt & Gather. But before we get into our interview with Jolie, we've been thinking about a lot of things. We just want to talk.
You and I have been having a number of conversations about what are the bets that we'd make if we were sitting in the conference room together, regardless of the brief, but really exploring the formats and new opportunities that we're seeing in the market. And one of the things that has me really thinking, and I don't think anybody's prepared for what I'm about to say, but that's direct mail. You know, this idea that we can use technology on analog formats to break open a conversation. We've got smart speaker adoption increasing, you know, things streaming in the background, all of these mediums for a piece of content to play off of. And I am just waiting for somebody to take a catalog, take a postcard, and turn it into something more.
It is so smart, this idea. And also, rebooting this idea of attribution, data, personalization, specificity. You want to blow the doors off brands blow the doors off there.
I think there's been brands that have done tremendous jobs of taking data and localizing the data to tell stories. But if you get it down to the zip plus four to my address, right? If I'm a customer who's raising my hand and actively ordering things, and I'm ordering things more than ever before, you know, which kind of leads me to my next thought is in-home, the new out-of-home. When you think about all of the things that are coming, be it Amazon packaging or otherwise, isn't it interesting to think about how to deconstruct the box to reverse engineer commerce to tell me a story to pull me back in?
Yes. Or to talk to other people.
I think the boxes that are showing up on our doorstep as a result of having to do more from home, the new billboard.
Your whole point about like in-home is the new out-of-home, I think in-home is probably the better out-of-home. Because you're literally physically holding something you either purchased, you may be interested in your hand.
It's interesting to think about when a package arrives at my door, it is not the end of the journey. It is the beginning of the next step.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Okay, what's next on your list?
Well, and speaking of in-home is the new out-of-home. In-home has also led to many hours spent recently in the social audio space. So I know you and I have been talking quite a bit about Clubhouse. I was recently listening to Whitney Wolf Herd when she IPO'd drop in and talk about what that experience was like. In what would normally have required me to pack a bag, buy a ticket, plane ticket, conference ticket.
And no opportunity to actually join the conversation. That's exactly right. And I think, you know, we talked about this early in the pandemic. People are accessible right now in general, by the way.
Right.
They are quite literally mostly at home. And so I think that the thing is now this technology is allowing people to have this actually tangibly have a sense of that access to anyone. That's not going to go away when we get past COVID and being at home all the time. What I think, though, is one of the driving forces behind this is actually the creator economy. I mean, look at Substack, right?
Well, I was just going to say these platforms are becoming the new discovery engines.
It's the new discovery engines for expertise, for IP, for talent,
thought leadership,
mm-hmm. et cetera. What's exciting about social audio is that some buddies are sitting shoulder and shoulder with nobodies.
Well, and the thing I think is interesting too, right? If you start to look at time spent, just because we have attention and just because consumers are spending time with our message, with our story, with our product, is a time well spent.
That's right.
The thing I think that is interesting about the social audio environment is, will there be indicators that tell us that it is time well spent? And starting to kind of pull apart these new insights that are like, this is what people really want to talk about. And I think we've talked about the idea of like being an anthropologist, right? Like you can go into these platforms and pull out insights in real time that can be informing what you do and how you show up as a brand tomorrow.
Oh my gosh, 100%. I'm seeing it in the Twitter feed is collaboration over competition.
Right. A theme we've been talking about
for years.
By the way, happy 4-year anniversary, Adlandia.
Happy. Oh, I thought that was to me. Yes. And to Adlandia.
Well, and to you too, thanks. My co-host.
Yeah. Thank you. Happy anniversary. Anyway, so I think what's really interesting is the thread that I'm seeing under social audio. There is a ton of money out there to be made. Tons. At the same time, tons of people are out of jobs. At the same time, tons of people are starting to find what they love and are good at and how to monetize it. So there's really interesting kind of tension, and all of this access is going to be a grand accelerator. That's exciting.
You know, and talking about access, with access, there's influence. And our guest today has been a curator and convener of influence for quite some time in our industry and is probably one of the best at it.
The thing that I think that is so interesting about Jolie and Jolie's business is that Jolie is not someone who is dealing with a bunch of reps for influencers. She actually has the relationship with these people. So whether it's from DC to publishing, to the government, to celebrity, to chefs, to this, to that, it's because she's actually created her own universe of relationships And she's connecting those people to interesting other relationships, whether that's with brands or with that's other celebrities or other people. More brands, more marketers need to think about the relationship, not only with the consumer like this, but how, what can you do to connect your buyer, your consumer, your customer with other relationships that are meaningful? The industry is talking about NFTs, non-fungible tokens, all over the place. The industry is talking about new IP, accelerated by technology. We should be talking about new IP created by relationships and how important it is at this point. And to Laura's point around direct mail, we, the industry, has an opportunity now to take a very broad channel and make it a personal experience. And that includes access and relationships.
Before we go into our conversation with Jolie, we are going to check in with our partners at Yieldmo for the fourth of our four-part discussion around making attention actionable.
We are here with Lisa Bradner, GM of Analytics, and Teddy Jaudi, Head of Product.
So Lisa, we as an industry have the opportunity to think about not just having people's attention, but really thinking about retention and comprehension and understanding the incremental long-term impact of the work that we do. Any thoughts on that?
I would go back to why I say you can't throw out reach and frequency. Frequency still matters. The problem is we've built everything in our industry on averages. I mean, I was in an agency. We'd say, oh yeah, the average frequency is 7. I mean, that was just like kind of pulled out of thin air. And then we apply it to absolutely every brand, every campaign, every everything, even though that's a 60-second spot, that's a 30-second spot, that was an ad on social media. I mean, you know, we've kind of, in my opinion, been lazy and applied averages as opposed to individuating. And again, this is where if you can process the data in real time, I can start to see that, you know what, Laura's frequency for mac and cheese is 3. She stops paying attention after that, right? So don't serve her 4, 5, 6, and 7 because she's not paying any attention anymore. Teddy, he's more like 5 because he's distracted and he's doing a lot of other things. So we'll cut Teddy off at 5, right? These are, you know, are they perfect? No. I still go back to brand lift studies and brand affinity studies. We can do those in our marketplace in real time. You don't have to wait 6 months and spend $100,000 to get that study. And I'd love to see people embrace more of that real-time learning, right?
I think more brands actually have to create hypotheses and then execute on those hypotheses. And they have to be well-formed. You know, that's where data and gut come together, put it in a hypothesis and run these tests and then start to actually get back some response.
Well, this is what I think big brands can start to learn from the direct-to-consumer companies, right? Which
yes.
is, you know, very often 3 people in a basement and a shoestring budget doing exactly that.
Yes.
We've got a product, we've got an idea, we've got a hypothesis about who it's for. Let's put it out and see what that does and see what it moves. If taking more of those small risks, right? We used to talk about 70-20-10, right? 70% of your dollars are tried and true, 20% are, you know, some tests that you want to scale, and 10% is, I don't know. I would argue post-COVID, it's probably you need to take that 10 to 25. Because the old ways of working aren't gonna work. So take 25% of your budget and put it behind those hypotheses. You still got 75% left.
This idea that the ecosystem of advertising, right? The pipes that you were talking about have been so fragmented. How do we bring it together? And I think when you talk about the other 75%, what we do is we even fragment this budget. Laura actually has a great quote that I love. Someone asked how much of my budget should go to innovation. She was like, all of it. Because if you're not innovating in everything you do, I don't know why you're spending money.
Instead of putting in a bucket called TV, say, what am I going to do differently in TV than I did last year?
That's exactly right.
Absolutely.
Because that's when your reach and frequency
right.
are actually turning into impact.
Right.
And so how do advertisers start to think about actually smoothing these kind of fragmented and disparate you know, activity and bubbles. How are you guys helping to kind of create these smoother ecosystems?
Some of the best advertisers I've seen out there, some of the best marketers I've seen, they approach advertising in a way that is about experimentation and tests. It's not just about trying to get incremental sales. They're really trying to learn more about their customers, and they're always experimenting with new strategies, and in doing this, they get a better return. They generate more sales. But that's like, if you look at advertising as a way to innovate and invest and learn more about your customers, you tend to be a better marketer and you tend to get more out of your advertising.
I completely agree with that. And I think that we need to both of your points, Lisa and Teddy, I think that as marketers, we have an opportunity to not think about advertising as a finite process. Lisa Bradner, Teddy Djouadi from Yieldmo, thank you for being our partners. Thank you for coming on Adlandia.
Thank you for having us.
Welcome back, Adlandia. Our guest this show, Laura and I quite literally met on top of a mountain in 2016 during CES.
Or in a canyon.
It was a canyon.
Okay, to be clear, you're right. Okay, sorry, girls with details. In a canyon, on a plateau, private dinner
lunch.
With guitarist.
Lunch.
Lunch. Okay, sorry. Okay, let's lunch on a plateau, Grand Canyon during CES. I'll get the year right, 2016. Jolie Hunt, welcome to the show. Jolie is the founder and CEO of Hunt & Gather.
Jolie!
Woo-hoo! What's up, ladies?
We've been talking about getting you on the show since I think we first fell in love on that plateau.
I think it's true. Although I think you need to stop calling it a plateau. As a PR person and as brand people, it's the actual Grand Canyon.
I'm not trying to brand it. I just want people to understand, we're in helicopters.
Yes.
And we didn't go to the ridge. We were in the canyon.
We went down, baby.
So we met in 2016. Hunt & Gather is a marketing communications agency. But I think what's so special about Hunt & Gather is you are the influencer to the influencers that influence. That is the truth, right?
Alexa and I were talking a little bit, getting ready for this interview, saying when you get an invite from Jolie, you're more focused on the fact that you got an invite from Jolie than what the invite is to. And I think that just really speaks to the level of tastemaker that you are in our industry, putting together and convening thought leaders, influencers, experts to create these unforgettable, not just experiences, but conversations and connections.
Where did you start? Let's talk about that. Before we get into the how, where did you start?
Start at the beginning. Well, look, I mean, I think the simplest answer is that both of my parents could talk to anyone, and they were both in sales jobs, and there was always a vibe. There was always energy. It was let's go do the thing, whether the thing was, motorcycle riding or catching crayfish, or my mom taking me to, haggle for a very, very tiny gemstone on 46th Street in the city. And so I don't know. I think the simple answer is other people give me energy, right? I want to be around people. And it doesn't even really matter what kind of people, as long as they are kind, engaging, and kind of down for whatever, right? I think we're living through a moment, I'm sure we'll come to it, but there's so much conjecture about who you are in this digital sphere. And I've always been a little bit more analog in my tastes, and I like people in real life, right? And my little adage is, know if you're an energy giver or an energy taker. And if you're not sure of the answer, I'll tell you.
How do you know? How do you know?
If you walk into a room or you call someone and you're your posture is a little bit taller, you smile, you're not fuck, I don't want to talk to this person. And so I do think that you got to pay attention to that. And so the accolades you've kindly bestowed upon me, I don't know that they were as purposeful as you may think. It was I liked who I liked, right? And it could be a chef, it could be a model, it could be a marketer. It really didn't matter to me what people did, it was like, well, why do you do that? Right. And so I think sometimes, you know, some of my closest friends are people that I invited to something because I just thought they would be amazing. Yeah. And so I don't know. It's been a gas.
How did that translate into
a business?
Well, but professional, before we get to hunt and gather, how did it translate into your life as a, I mean, you were chief marketing officer and communications.
Yes.
How did that all translate?
Look, my big break was at 25 when I started running communications for the FT, right? So if I look at people in my life that are 25 now, I'm like, how did they let me do that? And, you know, I traveled all over the world with the editor, Lionel Barber, who remains a dear friend to this day. I'm actually helping him launch his book. So, you know, people come back. And I just had this amazing front row seat to global news and politics. And so, and I really had a champion. I think that's the big secret here, right? I had somebody at a very tender age who said, you do what you do. I would go in and, you know, to the head of the Asia Society, and they were, you know, 50 years older than I was, and they just did not want to see me. And, you know, and I was always very polite. And I said, you can dismiss me as much as you want. I'm the one who's going to get the thing done that we're trying to do. And I guarantee you, you're going to want to hug me by the end of this meeting. And I think growing up in a newsroom, you just get a nose for, hey, that is the kernel in that whole story that is interesting. And I feel like that has had some transference in my life for events or people or brands or partnerships were like, whoa, like, hold on. That thing in line six that you just rolled over, that's actually the money shot, right? And so from the FT, I went to Reuters. And so Reuters and Thomson Reuters became really the grown-up version of the FT job that I had, right? I ran global PR and then I took on brand. I moved to London for a couple years. And that was the job. I got that job at 30. And that was the job that really gave me a platform to bring people along, right? And I just never had an issue playing nice with others. It was like, hey, there's enough. I just want to do the work. And I feel like it was like the golden era of work being, you know, 85% about the results you can produce and 15% about the politics. And I was recruited to AOL. You know, it was the first time I was a CMO at a publicly traded company. And from like week three, it was really not a fit. And look, it took me the better part of a year to get over that experience. And like, had I not had such a supportive husband and like home life to kind of weather that moment, and like a beautiful thing happened. I know you just had Malcolm on a few months ago, but I got a call from Jacob Weisberg, who was running Slate, and I got a call from Tina Brown, who was running the Daily Beast. And they said a version of the same thing. Tina said, I love you, you're fabulous. I don't know what the fuck is going on over there, but I need you to come with me to Davos and plan a dinner for Melinda Gates. Pack your bags. And I was like, all right, great. I'm free. And Jacob said, hey, we're doing this thing with GE and we're doing this road show around middle America. And we need someone to like wrangle the mayors and some press and like a whole bunch of town halls. I was like, oh, you know, you need a cruise director. Like, perfect. I can be your cruise director. And so this beautiful thing started happening where friends, mostly friends from media, started calling and saying, hey, I've always wanted to work with you.
Yeah.
I could never really afford you as a, you know, full-time all singing, all dancing. So could we do this project?
So by the way, full circle moment.
Yeah.
I worked on the roadshow for growth.
So it's her idea.
Shit, Laura, yeah. Really? That's amazing.
Yes. So that just as I was listening to you talk about it, I'm like, how has it taken until this point to realize we were always destined to be on the roadshow to something together, Jolie? But I want to go back to something you said, right? You said you just know how to get in and execute. And Alexa and I talk a lot about the conceptual side of the business. And there are so many great ideas that exist in the world. But being able to land the plane, that's magic. And we've just seen you consistently do that in all sorts of capacities. And clearly some of the names and company you were just talking about, I have to imagine the pressure that comes with putting on some of those events, but yet it seems like it just comes so natural. So how do you know how to execute? What's the thing? Is there a secret formula that maybe is not so secret?
I mean, I am a bull. I mean, I just do not take no for an answer, like ever. And I don't mean that as I have rough elbows. I actually feel like I am quite kind in the process. I feel like I'm not a win at all costs type of person, but I am a get it done at all costs type of person. And I think it's also, and again, it sounds cheesy. It's just like the output is so important to me. It always has been. So like people that can write decks all day and think big thoughts and strategize, that like would literally like, it's like watching paint dry for me. I started a business, so I've never have to write a deck again. P.S. I failed. But I think that, I mean, I will haunt you like a house until I can get it done, right? So I'm trying to hire right now, and I have asked no less than 50 people for recommendations, and I follow up with their recommendations. I find them on LinkedIn. I find their emails. I write to them. So, I mean, I think it's like a pride thing, but I'm like that in my real life anyway, too. It's like I sometimes don't even realize it, but I always feel like if I'm not moving forward, I'm moving backward. I love the fruits of people's labor standing for something. And look, don't get it twisted. I mean, I've never really thought there's like this epic nobility to this work, right? Like it should be fun. It should be light. It should be an experience. You should leave happier than when you came, right? And so I think for me, it's always been around like, how can this work that I do be a bright spot in someone's day, right? And can they make a new friend? Can that friend 10 years from now remind them of this moment of generosity they shared, or a stupid little joke? And so I have a lot of help is the answer, right? I have people around me who pride themselves on like getting that boulder up the hill, and they do it because they care about the same thing. I think if you can have people on your side, they want to work hard for you. And that's always been my mentality. It's like the old, you know, more bees with honey. And I've never understood why people don't just put a dollop of something good in it for others.
You're thoughtful in how you think about getting those connections made. And where they're made. So how do you think about that? Like, is there any method to your madness, right? Or is it just a kind of natural inclination? Because you're not, I just want the audience to know this. Hunt and Gather works for huge fashion houses to industrial companies like GE and IBM, to massive publishers, Vice, media companies, etc. It's not just brand and fluffy thought leadership. This is launching products,
yeah,
technologies.
The thing that differentiates people is like some people are just like, that would be fun. And I'm like, I'm going to make 6 calls right now and see if I can pull this off. And yes, like, we're just going to do it.
So talk about that curation element of like, do you go into planning these experiences looking for a particular outcome? Or is there a general sense of feeling you try to create, or conversation you're trying to, you know, make happen?
I'd say 50% of the time I have a rough sense of the palette, right? So I never have a like, this is what needs to happen. I feel like it's a lot more art than science in that respect. I think I have, you know, 8,000 people in my phone contacts, and I just have a weird brain for details and memories. I remember what someone was wearing. I remember the detail about their daughter, or you know, what gave them heartburn when they were pregnant. And it's not put on, right? It's just sort of human nature for me now. I think I had to learn that early on. A sidebar is that I sold cars when I was in high school.
It's like the hardest job.
I was 15. I couldn't drive. I did not have a license. And I worked for a car dealership in upstate New York. And I swear this is what gave me this skill. And you would meet these people on the lot that were coming to, you know, buy a newer used Dodge car or truck, right? And so they would come and they'd say their name. And then 3 minutes later, you would forget their name. And I would think like, how am I going to sell this person a $20,000 car if I just literally am not addressing them by name? And so I would ask for their license, and I didn't even need their license, by the way. And I would go and I would make a copy of the license, and I would literally just sit there and be like, Fred. Like I would sing the names. And I think as a result, I just got so good at remembering people's names and faces and what they said. By the way,
How many cars did you sell?
Guys, I sold 3 cars the first day I sold cars.
Yep. I knew it.
I believe it.
I got really good at like learning people will tell you anything you need to know about them. You just have to listen. Right. And my gripe at people that want to network, right, which is, I find such a weird kind of crass word, you're going in to learn, right? And it's like, you could be in a room of 100 and there could be one interesting person. And like, that to me is successful. Like, that's a great night. If you walk out of a place with one resonant relationship that didn't exist before you went there, like, how great is that?
I want to know how all of this, it's a mindset. It's a mindset. Yeah. It's a mindset and it's behavior. How does it relate to your business? Do you think about taking on or not taking on clients?
Yes.
Right? With the same kind of criteria?
I mean, we have a really great range of clients and friends, from Birchbox to Dow Jones to AT&T to Athleta to Universal Standard to Barry's Bootcamp to Amazon. And there's some really cool emergent tech brands. For me, it's never about the company. It's about the people. And if I also then happen to love the company, then I will consider it. And sometimes I make myself like the company because I'm just so obsessed with the person. but, you know, like I'm going to do something with the fertility business. I literally know the, like, go to zero and then just keep going down about fertility. Like, I don't know anything about it, but I'm obsessed with the people behind it. And I'm like, you know what? It's ripe for revolution. And it's so important to women in our, you know, age group and peer group. So, okay, I can learn that. And I think the coolest thing about having your own company, which I can't believe I learned in my like mid late 30s, is like choice, right? I can work on like a juice brand, a fashion company, a big telco, like work with Kanye West. Like there's no two plans that you're like, oh, just dust off the plan for so-and-so and give it to, like, it's all custom. And it's really hard to recruit, and I'm recruiting. So if anybody listening,
what are you hiring for?
Yeah.
I'm hiring for ace people who are grounded in communications, who can instill confidence in clients and their teammates, and who either are killer project managers or have amazing relationships in the world, just like ace humans who are hot shit at the work, right? And that can be 10 years experience, that can be 20 years experience, that can be 2 years experience, right? I just hired 3 people last month. And so I'm really hiring sort of account director, senior account director, VP levels.
I want to talk about some of the things that you've said that really resonated with me. And I want to turn them into for brands, how brands should think. So you were talking about selling.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. I mean, such a simple lesson, but selling and knowing something about them, caring and listening. How do brands start connecting at a time where connection has been completely, right, bifurcated, demolished? It's confusing. And now it also feels, in some cases, I think a lot of brands feel like if they're trying to connect with their audiences or trying to connect with their buyer, that they can overstep and it can feel inauthentic, and finding that kind of not only unique place where they can fill a role, but also real place. I'm not even gonna say authentic, but real place they can fill a role. How do you think about that? How should brands think about that?
I think we're in a moment where people want to feel spoken to and seen, right? So I look at a project we just had the great pleasure of working on with Athleta, which is part of Gap Inc. and an amazing B Corp, you know, 96% women employed and female run. And it's a business that really stands for something. And they just expanded into truly inclusive sizing. And they're certainly not the first. And thinking about how they show up in that way, it was so simple yet so powerful in that they decided to be truly inclusive and equal so that the mannequins are inclusive, right? That you're not going to a rack in the back of the store on the, you know, the back right if you're a size 2X, right?
Right.
That is mixed in with the size XS. And all employees are getting training on how to make sure people feel welcome and seen and that it's a place for them. And so I think, look, I'm no expert at this, but I think if you can just really think about and be in the shoes of the people that you are marketing to, selling to, understanding, like, how does this fit into their life? Is this a necessity? Is this a luxury? Like, could you not buy clothes before unless you bought them online? Like, that's a major, major breakthrough, right? It seems to also be the moment of collaborations and also just where 2 + 2 = 5. I think about everything in terms of customization and how can you, it's like, what's happening in the zeitgeist? What's the gut? What's like, what are people talking about? And how do you immediately catch that flame? And how do you think about that, right?
Well, we have a lot of collaborations coming out of this.
Okay, perfect.
But before you go,
we're going to go to our game. Jolie, what would you kill? What would you get rid of? What would you buy? And what would you do yourself?
I would kill reply all and about a third to a half of all technologies right now that can reach me. I feel like in any given day, I have LinkedIn pings and people are texting me, people are Slacking me, I'm on the Zoom calls, I'm getting email. Like, I just, if anyone, please don't invite me to Clubhouse. Just don't. I'm never going to go there. Like, I didn't go to Second Life. I feel like it's like too much, you know? It's so the thing that I would kill is like people repeatedly, but in different mediums trying to reach you. It's like, hey, I just slapped you on a text. It's like, okay, well, give me 4 minutes and maybe I'll get back to you. It's so, I don't know. For me, it's like too much. Can't have a creative thought because I'm just like batting away all of these ridiculous messages.
I love the delete reply all. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. What would you buy?
I buy a lot of stuff for my kids, and my eBay habits. Like, I am Liz Lemon. Like, I buy bras on eBay. So like, I genuinely do. Oh, I love a good eBay purchase. Like, I, by the way, the thing to know about me,
what was your last eBay purchase?
UGG slippers for my husband and a snowsuit for my son. And I think a mandolin.
What would you do yourself that you're not already doing?
That I'm not already doing. I hate doing things myself. I am a champion outsourcer. So I don't want to do anything that I'm not already doing. In fact, I want to do fewer things.
If people want to get in touch with you to talk all things hunt and gather and or apply for these open positions you have or just to hear about your latest purchases on eBay, how can they get in touch with you?
They can email me, jolie@hunt-gather.com.
We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Jolie. Big thanks, Jolie. I hope the next time we see you, we don't have to wait to be in the middle of the Grand Canyon during CES.
Well, I go back to the conversation we had with Bob Pittman. What's the need you're filling when you look at how Jolie approaches putting people together to inspire, encourage? There's a deliberate intent in how she approaches it, and it's filling the need.
That's right.
Not just, I think, of what she's hired to do, but also to ensure that the people who are participating are also walking away with an experience, which, by the way, I would imagine creates more business, you know? And so it's interesting to think about not just the need of what you are convening people for, but the need of the people participating on the other side of that engagement.
Yeah, I agree. And I think going back to the very top of the conversation with what we were talking about around the creator economy, the passion economy, this idea of individualism that is starting to become really loud, really loud. I think it's so exciting. And I think when you put different voices together, collaborating on influence and point of view that has completely diverse perspectives, starts to become really exciting around how do you start to cater to your audience? And how do you start, again, Laura, like use a simple format like direct mail, right?
And I believe at one point at the top of the show, there used to be a line that said, if you program for everyone, you program for no one.
Laura, you know, people think that the show has been only around for 4 years, but I got to tell them, it's been around 8. We just weren't on air.
There are people, a few in particular, that I'm thinking about who say, I don't need to listen to the podcast. I get it every day.
Exactly.
But Alexa, there's nobody I'd rather be doing this with. So thank you for showing up and challenging me all day in every way. I love doing this. I love talking with you and all of our guests. And 4 years feels like a graduation, but I have a feeling we're just getting started. So thank you, Edlandia. Big thank you to Bob, Connell, Carter, Andy, Eric, Gail, Val, Michael, Jen. We appreciate you. Thank you so much for this opportunity. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Got menopause? We've got you. Hi, Jackie here, founder of ExoJackie. Feel supported throughout your menopause journey and beyond with our organic protein powders and symptom relief boosts. Formulated to keep bones and muscles strong, ExoJackie products help reduce bloating, hot flashes, and weight gain. Enjoy 20% off with promo code EXOPODCAST. Shop now at ExoJackie.com. Made for women by women.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.